is halacha day on Hilchos Nedarim. So it happens to be that a couple of weeks ago, Rabbi Pransky gave a nice shiur in our shul on Hilchos Nedarim, and we'll after that, I actually went and looked up some of the sources and found a couple of other things of interest with regards to that issue in the laws of Nedarim. What is it? So this is so while we are accustomed to not making any neder, trying to avoid taking an oath, there is a line in Shulchan Aruch based on a couple of Gemaras that seem to indicate that you could take a neder without even thinking about it. That's what the words seem to mean. What is that? So the Shulchan Aruch tells us Devarim Hamutarim Vayiduim Behem Shehem Mutarim, that somebody is something that is mutter and it's known to you. This is Simon Reshia Dalet in your Adaya. Something that is mutter and you know that it's mutter. Nogu Behem Isser, but yet you act as if it is usser. I mean, it sounds like you're taking a chumrah upon yourself. Ki'ilu Kiblum Alehem Ben Neder. It's as if you have accepted it upon yourself as a neder, va'asur lahatirim b'hem, and it is prohibited to be matirit. Right? It sounds like pretty extreme that you can't just go ahead and be mutter. So therefore, a person who has the custom of fasting on fasts before Rosh Hashanah or between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, or he says I'm not, or misharagil shul lechol basar shul lishtos yayin from Rosh Chodesh Av until Shiva, or from Shiva Saritamas, a person who has the custom. This is our custom. I'm not drinking wine or eating meat from Rosh Chodesh Av until the 17th of Tammuz. So lachzor bo machmas she'in. And if he needs to back out because he's not feeling well or something like that, or he's not completely healthy, might be important to figure out what that distinction is. Tzarek shlosha shiatirlo. He needs to do hataras nedarim. That is the halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Actually, it's a pretty long sif, but that's the way that we seem to assume. That's something that is permissible, and yet one acts as if it is prohibited, as if one has accepted it upon yourself as a neder. It is prohibited to back down from it, but if you need to, meaning it sounds like if you're, for some reason, you need to make some kind of change, so then it would be one would have to go ahead and do Hataras Nedarim. One would have to go and do Hataras Nedarim on that. So that is a important, it sounds like it's an important halacha. Now, what is that? What is so what is this based on? So listen, before we figure out some cases, so there is a Gemara Masechta Nedarim, they seem to say it explicitly, based on this pasuk. Right, the Gemara tells us in Nedarim, Tesvav Amar Aleph, Tanya Dvarim Hamutarim Bachirim Nogu Behem Aser, something that is permissible and other people act as if it is Aser. O Atarashayel, Iatarashayel, one is not permitted to matter it in front of them. Now, what the Gemara seems to actually be talking about, going ahead and acting as if it is mutter in front of them, meaning it's clear of like implying to them that it's okay. Why? Based on the pasuk in this parak, lo yachel dvaro, one is not allowed to violate their words. Right? Not just are they not permitted to do it, but even a person would not be allowed to stand in front of them and seem to demonstrate to them that it would be permissible. And
so you'd be doing that in front of individuals who
have this chumrah. Yeah. So the Gemara. So yeah. So the Gemara Maseches. So the Gemara Maseches Pesachim Daf Nun Amud Beis in the parak entitled Makom Shenagu, which discusses many of these things. So it gives a couple of details. It quotes this Gemara. And the example that the Gemara is giving, and then it gives a couple of other examples as well, but the original example that it gives is, actually here, that the B'nai Baishan, Nagu Delohavu Az. No, that's a different halacha here. B'nei Chuzai, Nagi de Mefarshi Chala Me'aroza, that the people of Chuzai, that they had a custom of separating challah from rice cakes. That if one would make a rice dough, I don't know if that's possible, they would make rice cakes, so they would take off challah. Now, we assume that the separation of challah only has to be from the five grains, right? Not from this. But they had the custom of doing the rice. So, Asuv Amrulei Rav Yosef, so they came and told Rav Yosef, Amruluhu Nechla Zar Papai. We said, let somebody go and have that challah in front of them, meaning and they will demonstrate to them that it's not subject to chal. So Abaye asked, "Varma hamutar v'achirim nogu behem iser, right? Iyat harashay latirim rifneim." He says, "I thought you're not allowed to do that. It's a gemara nedarim, right? If people have a something that they are acting as if they are us, so you're not allowed to go and permit in front of them." So he responds by saying, "Lav mi itmar Allah, right? It's not been saying I'm Rav Chista b'kusai. The Rav Chista said that that's speaking about people that are." Kuthians, right? That right, only by people that are Kuthians and not people that are under normal circumstances. He says, what's the reason by the Kusai Mishum? The Gemara says Mishum, the Misarchi Milsa, because they're going to get confused. Hanachin Shinai, but these people also, Sari Misai, are going to get it confused. So, right?
The Kuthians are going to get it confused.
No, the Kuthians for sure will, but these people will also. What does it mean they will also? They say, ah, it must be that there's no mitzvah of challah, right? That we assume rice and grains are all the same thing. Must be. So rather, Avashi says, well, go and take a look. If most people, what they eat is rice bread. I mean, they don't actually have regular flour very often. So then you're not allowed to back it out. Lo nech lazar b'pari. You shouldn't go in front of them because dilben mishtabcha torah challah minayu. But then maybe they'll forget about the whole idea that there is such a thing as a mitzvah of challah. But if they have plenty of grain and they happen to have rice also, so they don't take off challah of rice, so it'll be okay. They'll take off challah of other things. It's not going to be so confusing. So nech lazar b'pari. Right, then one should go because there is a bit of a risk involved also. What is that risk? That people might say, oh, well, I'll take off a challah off the rice cake and I'll leave the regular loaves intact. Right? So in order to avoid that situation of confusion, so therefore it's better to teach them. But if that's not a concern, that's going to happen. So it sounds like that one's going to go ahead and maintain the chumrah. The Gemara actually goes on and gives another three examples of these types of things and gives similar answers that people aren't so learned, so one should be careful about not going ahead and demonstrating in front of them that things are permissible. But yet, so that truth is, at the end, when the dust settles in that Gemara, it may or may not actually be a proof to this idea. But the Beis Yosef himself quotes this also from where am I here? Beis Yosef as well quotes it from that there's a Ran. There's a Ran that quotes sets it explicitly in the name of Rav Yehuda HaKohen, one of the first examples of somebody perhaps being given a last name, but not really, but it's really HaKohen. That somebody who has a Mishnah Shalom Lech Basar Olisanus Zman Yadua, that somebody has this din, so that's stated explicitly. If they have a personal custom, so they're not allowed to change it. I mean, the first examples were only you're not allowed to try to get them to change it. But the Mishonim on Maseches Nedarim actually say it explicitly as that the person themselves would not be allowed to go ahead and change it if they have this thing where they are being machmar themselves and not doing certain things. The truth is, I'm not sure why the Beis Yosef doesn't quote it, but also actually, he doesn't say where the Yerushalmi is. Maybe he's alluding to this Yerushalmi. There is a Beferish Yerushalmi that seems to say this as well. Maybe I shouldn't say it's Beferish, but there might be a Machlokes because we've shown him as to why that is. There's a Yerushalmi in the beginning of Maseches. Well, there's a mission in the beginning of Maseches Shkalim that says that a father who comes and offers Shkalim on behalf of their ketanim, right? That you have to come and you have to offer Shkalim on behalf of themselves. So they have to offer on behalf of their children. So no, but if they do, they have to continue to do so. And the Gemara seems to imply that it's this kind of thing. Because you had an Nehaga Tova, one is not permitted to change it. It's a little bit of a question that the Rishonim have over there as to why that is. But the Yerushalmi does seem to invoke this idea, not just with regards to the prohibition, but even with a positive mitzvah. That if one already had the custom of bringing Maksas Shekel on behalf of one's children, so one is not allowed to stop doing it. There is a Machlokes Rishonim as to whether that would apply to the child themselves. Let's say the parent dies, and now the child comes back, when the child was 9 years old, now a child comes back when they're 10 years old. So is there some kind of requirement to continue it on their behalf? There may be a hakira, what that is based on, yeah. But the Gemara seems to imply that there is this type of idea, that once a person does something, so then they're not allowed to stop doing it, right? So now that leads to a whole bunch of questions. So Pransky gave this year, his example was that this gives a bunch of girls in high school, he's trying his daughter's high school, all the kids in their class are all neurotic about this, because like, what happens? So you say good morning to this particular girl. So does that mean I can't stop? I have to say good morning to her the next day? But do I have to like call her, you know, find her on Shabbos morning and make sure that I give her a good morning then, and call her on Sunday to make sure I give a good morning? I mean, at what point does that stop? I also looked around for a few other detail, you know, just put in this idea into Google. What other thoughts are there? You know, does this come up practically? So a couple of things that are out there, none of them really got into it in much depth, but one idea is there is a chumrah on Shabbos, those that maintain the minhag agra, to cut both challahs on Shabbos morning, not just to cut or Shabbos night, Shabbos morning, and Shabbos afternoon. That the Vilna Gaon held that the idea of achieving, there's an idea that the challahs on Shabbos represent the lechem hapanim, so therefore you should have 12. So there are chassidim who would specifically have 12 challahs on Shabbos. They would have like two big ones and 10 little ones. There's I don't think Chabad has this. They probably couldn't afford it, right? What?
The
Arizal would have such an idea, right? So there are chassidim, those perhaps from more wealthy areas of Europe, had this custom of having 12 loaves on Shabbos. So the Vilna Gaon came along and said, there's no such din. Rather, how do you get the 12 loaves? Well, if you have two loaves on every meal, and you cut both in half, right? You cut both. So two, that gives you four times three equals 12. So there is a minhag agra of cutting both challahs for each of the meals. So somebody raised the question, hey, wait a sec, you know, that worked great when I had kids at home, right? But now I don't have kids at home, so I'm a little tired of having losing all this challah at the end of every Shabbos, right? So do I have to, if I want to change that, do I have to do a taras nedarim? Or I have a friend of mine, I think we went to their house once on a Friday night, and he, despite having several children, he only had two candles going. So I think my wife asked, like, what's like, what was it, two candles? Yeah. So he said, there's no makor for having, so he said, I talked to one of our band, there's no makor for lighting a candle for each of your kids. Mm-hmm. There are some other makoros out there, some say two, some there are some reasons perhaps to do more, but you're not going to find anywhere in the classical literature this idea of lighting a candle per kid. But yet, who here, did everybody here, like, right, is that out there, right? I'm sure people have done that.
Since we started a family, even though the kids aren't there now, then there's three lit. But I guess that's because
three
started a family. What? The third one is presumably for all the kids.
Just represents all kids, yeah, and grandchildren, yeah, yeah, etc. Okay, fine. So the first thing, you don't have to do it. So, you know, so, all right, fine. So the next one, I told my wife, and my wife only lights two candles from then on. So I actually sent him an email last week. Said, by the way, when you stopped doing it, did you do a Taras Nedarim? Right? So he didn't remember whether that was something that, and maybe it's not even necessary for reasons that we're going to see.
What?
A Taras Nedarim is annulment of vows.
Yeah.
Right? And on Erev Rosh Hashanah, by the way, in the text of the Atar Sadar, on Erev Rosh Hashanah, it includes these hanhagos, and any hanhagos tovos which I started doing, I hereby annul those vows. Right? So do you have to, right? So one other thing that I saw, this is a somewhat of a cute one, but a little bit scary perhaps, but somebody recorded that that one of the Sephardic Rabbanim in the last election, it seems like it was in the last election, put it in Israel, said that you're all mechuyev to vote, and you're all, and it being a Sephardi, you're all mechuyev to vote shas. Right? And if you say that you don't want to, and if you say, well, I go to an Ashkenazi yeshiva, and therefore I have a karis, I want to listen to my rebbeim in the Ashkenazi yeshiva, and therefore vote, Degel HaTorah, or maybe Daniel Torres, I remember which one. I want to vote for what they say. He says, well, you're mechuyev to do a taras nedarim, but I have hereby banned all Sephardi rabbanim from taking part of a beis din that would matter such a net. Right? So is that, so what is the status of that? That's a little bit, I mean, because you maintain Sephardi and Hagos, you're therefore required to vote Shas in that election. So,
yes.
Whatever. That's another pressing shaila that is out there. So how do we? How does this work? What is the limitations of this idea called anhagos tovos? So number one is mentioned here in the Shulchan Aruch itself. He actually already mentioned it. He says Dvar Mahamutarim Bahayodim Bahem Shehem Mutarim, and you know that it's mutter, but yet you still act as if it is aser. So what does that mean? Sorry, right, you select the disaster. So what then is the Shulchan Aruch excluding? It's excluding a case where you never actually knew it was a chumrah, right? You just were doing it because you figured that's something that you had to do. But then you grew up and you found out that maybe it's okay. So you grew up knowing that, what do you mean? You light a candle for every kid in the family, right? That's obviously what you do, right? And then you learned a little bit more and realized, hey, wait a second, that's not really required. That's only, wherever, you don't even know where that minhag came from, but that's a minhag that's out there. I'm not actually required to do that. Lighting two candles is sufficient. So it sounds like, according to Shulchan Aruch, one would not be required on that basis to do a Taras Adar, because one never recognized that they were doing it as a chumrah, right? So that could perhaps be applicable to, so this idea of cutting both challahs, right? So there a person was doing it as a chumrah, right? Presumably, if a person has that minhag, they probably recognize that it's a chumrah and that it's not required. So therefore, this would not apply to him, and therefore a Taras Adar, right? Now, he still would then go ahead and do a Taras Adar. He'd still go ahead and do annulment of the vows, right? But you would not be
not
able to...
Not necessarily for this. I mean, if you didn't know it was a chumrah in the first place, you just did it.
Yeah, so then you would. So then, technically, if you decide, then all of a sudden you learn a little bit. Then you would not even have to do a Taras Nadarim, right? But if the case where the guy knew that it was a chumrah,
okay.
Right, and now he wants to stop doing the chumrah for some reason, so then he would have to go ahead and do a Taras Nadarim. Yes. That's kula number one. The second kula is found on the daf here. Where is it? In the Dagul Merivava. There it is. In Dagul Merivava. So what was the example? The example in the Shulchan Aruch was something that is that he wants to fast. He's talking about fast either before Rosh Hashanah or between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim. Right? That's actually the idea of starting Slichos a couple of days, 4 days before, to give you the opportunity to give you 10 days of fasting. Right, because there are a couple of days you're not allowed. If you're not allowed to fast Erev Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to fast Shabbos Shuva, you're not allowed to fast 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, unless you are. Right, so those 4 days would then are then excluded from fasting. So if you want to get 10 days of fasting in, so then you get the days of Slichos beforehand as well. Okay, so and he says, but you want to stop doing it because Shmach Sheinu Beria, you're not so healthy. So he says you would have to then do a Taras Adarim. So comes the Shach, actually, start there. The Shach comments that, wait a second, there is another section of Shulchan Aruch where this is discussed. This is in Orach Chaim, in Tav Kuf Samaches. And in Tav Kuf Samaches, that's in Hilchos Tainus, and there it makes the comment of Hanodir Latzom Asara Yamim Be'ezi Yom Sheyirtzev Ha'imis Ana Be'yom Echon Mehem. Somebody who takes a neder that they're going to fast for 10 days. Not necessarily talking about the Sarah Samaritan, but 10 days. V'hutzarach L'dvar Mitzah Umifnei Kavod Adam Gadol. And he wants to break it for a Dvar Mitzvah. What's the example of a Dvar Mitzvah? So the Rishon says, for instance, there's a bris. Lo and behold, you're invited to a bris, and wait a second, I want, you know, bagels and lox. I can't get those so often. So now I want to eat at the bris. Or maybe Mechuyev, meaning it's a Sudas Mitzvah. So I should be eating at the bris. So Right, so he should go and fast a different day. Meaning he could eat those days, and he doesn't have to, and he would make up the day some other time. Right? And the Mishnah Berurah then adds in these words, V'ein tzarech lahatir neder. And one does not have to do Hataras Adarim. Right? So why would one not have to do a Taras Adarim?
Because you're still doing 10 days.
No, but I'm going to fast these 10 days.
All right, but...
Oh, no, I'm sorry, you're right.
It's just due to other conditions, you're... moving it around.
I'm sorry. It's not based on, just based on that, but in the Rama. The Rama then adds in V'chol Shekin. There it is. V'chol Shekin. There it is. There you go. That's the line. That's the line that Shach gets upset about. There is an idea that after Sukkot and after Pesach to observe the fast days of Bahab, Monday, Thursday, and Monday, right? So let's say a person accepted it upon themselves, yeah. Right? Or to fast for the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, and all of a sudden a bris happens, says the Ramah, mitzvah lechol, you have to eat, you should eat, mitzvah lechol, ve'ein tzar chatara, and you do not require hatara sedara. So ask the Shach, why?
Why?
You accepted a hanhaga tova, right? You accepted that one is going to fast. So why should the bris all of a sudden exempt you? So the Shach's answer is, he says it's not a question. Because there's no fast day if there's a bris mila. I mean, you accepted upon yourself that you're going to fast these 3 days. Assuming that the rules and regulations of those 3 days maintain that I should be fasting. But if it's a day that if something happens that I shouldn't be fasting, right? So then you don't. Like, so for example, a person accepts upon themselves, I'm going to say every single word of the Monday and Thursday tachlit. Good luck, right? I'm going to say every word of that really long tachlin, and then all of a sudden something happens. There's a bris in shul, and now we're not saying tachlin that day. So okay, so I'm exempt from saying tachlin that day. I'm only going to say it when I'm required to do so. That's the answer that the Shach gives, which makes it a very localized thing, right? It happens to be a detail within that halacha. But the Dagomir Avava is otherwise known as the who? I don't know. The No Debi Yehuda. Whose name wasn't actually a Nodav Yehuda, his name was Rabbi Cheskel Landau, Rav in Prague. I have actually, my brother-in-law and sister-in-law visited Prague the last couple of weeks. You can actually go to, there's some Jewish museum in Prague, where you can see handwriting of the Nodav Yehuda. They didn't tell me, they said they didn't know if his kever is accessible or not. They didn't find his kever, but they did find some writing from him. So he says the whole thing is problem. He says this is the difference. This is the note he says this is the difference. That when it comes to the bris mila, you're not backing out of your minhag. He says rather you're going to eat at that su'uda, and then you're going to go back to your hanhaga of fasting on the Bahab. I mean, it's like a one-time exemption. If it's a one-time exemption that for some reason you need to back out, so okay, you need to back out. But then you're going back in. That does not require a Tara Siddhar. However, he says, and so he says similarly, let's say you got sick. I am accepting upon myself to fast for the Aseres Yemei Tshuva. And then I got sick one of those days. Yeah. So okay, you got sick one of those days. You could back out. He says, however, what's the Shulchan Aruch saying that you need hataras nedarim, that you need to totally get out of the nether? He says, that case, that's talking about a case where you're done. So this fasting thing, I've been doing this for a while, I'm tired of it. That's when I was really healthy, now I'm not so healthy. It seems like you're not at the point that you would be permitted to eat. You're not there, but I'm just, I can't do it anymore. Right? I can't do it anymore. If that's the case, so then one would require a Tara Siddharim. So that sort of is Heter number two. Heter number two is, if it's like a one-time reason why I can't do it, that doesn't get me out of the Anhaga Tova. It's only when I completely want to end it. But okay, sometimes I still completely want to end it, right? The challah guy, who wanted to stop cutting two challahs every Shabbos, right? Him and his wife are now, gluten-free people, right? So they're going to be stuck with all this extra challah around. He wants to be done with it, right? I want this nether away. So what's the next, what other things are there to do? So the next thing would be, the next idea is that there is a, is that the exact details actually shows up a couple of sifim earlier. The Shulchan Aruch records a little bit earlier in Kuf Yud Gimel Sif Beis, Homer Eshne Perek Zeh Havikilu Neder. Right? A person who says, I'm going to go ahead and do this, that is like the person who's taken the nether. So, the Be'er Heitiv develops it a little bit more, right? And he says, or any other mitzvah, meaning any other mitzvah that I say I'm going to go ahead and do, right, that's when it's considered to be an anhaga tova. Now, truth is, it's there, it's not here. So to put the two together is a little bit unclear. Right, Pransky wanted to do it though. His suggestion is that that's also heter. That this is only when it is a what's what I want to look for? A pre-planned, a Premeditated act of goodness, right? A premeditated act of goodness that I get together and say, I'm going to go ahead and do a certain thing.
Yeah.
So that's when we say that that might qualify as a nether. But if it's, I don't know, a person shows up, a person said every word of Tachlin on a Monday, right? And then they said, hey, that worked pretty well, right? And then the next Thursday, they also say every word. Oh, look at that, that went pretty well. Now, the truth is, I shouldn't say you're not obligated to say every word going forward, right? but you know, the idea that a person has to be extremely, keep up that level of intent, that level of concentration to make sure that they continue to do it. Now, it might be a good idea, but doesn't qualify as being under the rules and regulations of nether. That is another suggestion. Again, I was going to send them a note finding exactly if there's a proof, because they are really going in different sifim, but that was his suggestion, that this whole idea of an hagatova is only if it's a premeditated on hagatova.
Okay, right. So if you just happen to say all the words on Monday, and then you happen to say all the words on Thursday, but you didn't.
Correct. Or if I happen to, show up in shul on time, right? So that is that's a good thing to do. That's certainly a haga tova. Does it mean that it is a neder going forward? So the suggestion would be that no. It's if you premeditate, said, I've been late all this time. Tomorrow morning, I am going to be there early. Right, and the next thing, I'm going to do it. Right, that's when we talk about an Ahagatova. If it is not, if it's only something that happened to have happened, right, that's not considered premeditated an Ahagatova and wouldn't fit under these rules. Okay. Right, and the other, that's aspect A, by the way, the premeditated part. The other premeditated part is the difference between saying, I'm going to do it, as opposed to, I'm going to try to do it. Right? Ha'omer eshne parak zeh. I am learning this parak. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. But if it's not fitting that those two rules, A, a premeditated hanhaga tova, and B, that it is something that I'm going to do, a person declares I'm going to do it, not just I'm going to try to go ahead and do it, so then one is going to... So that would fall under those rules. And then the heter number four is also that when a person accepts upon themselves, the example in the Shulchan Aruch is doing chumras, right? That person who accepts upon themselves is certain chumra. So the last thing is to keep in mind that it's still only a chumra, right? Just because a person has observed a certain stringency, assuming they have observed it as a stringency, all stringencies have a built-in leniency attached to it. And that is, if it's shasat chak, if that is a hefsed meruba, if that is it falls under certain circumstances, just because they have maintained a certain stringency as a chumrah, doesn't mean that the rules of chumrah all of a sudden get pulled away if a certain circumstance comes up. So if a person... has always maintained, you want to say chumran of not shaving for the entire 3 weeks, right? So they've never shaved from the time that they were 2 years old until the time they were not 10, but 30, 40, 50, right? All of those years they never shaved over the course of the 3 weeks or the course of Sfiras Omer, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden, one year they have a big interview that they need to take, and they know that in order to get a certain job they need to be able. So one of the heters of the three weeks, maybe not the 9 days, but the 3 weeks, is that one is permitted to shave for some sort of either to avoid hefsed meruba or even for business purposes, it's permissible to do so. So I can't say, well, I haven't, I've never shaved in 3 weeks. Yeah, you never shaved during the 3 weeks because you were a yeshiva bachar and nobody cared what you looked like, right? But now people do care what you look like. So therefore, yes, it still is on the books, but it was always maintained as a chumrah. That was the stringency that you kept. So embedded within that chumrah is that embedded within the rules of Sfiras Omer, within the rules of the 3 weeks, is that under certain circumstances it is permitted to take a haircut or to shave over the course of those 3 weeks. So under those circumstances, then payment would go ahead and be permitted. So that sort of knocks out many of the things that perhaps would cause anxiety about many of these on Hagos Tovos, right? So what are the, there is this rule on the books, but there are four heterim that we listed. Number one, one had to recognize that it was a chumra the entire time in order for it to be binding. Number two is that there is a is the idea of the no debi huda, that it's only if one is attempting to totally end this good practice, as opposed to a one-time one-time leniency. Number three is there's this distinction between saying I'm going to go ahead and do it, both being premeditated and something that we're going to make happen, as opposed to yeah, I'm going to give it a try tomorrow, or I'll try to be on time in the future. Those kinds of things. So that's not going to be fall under these rules. And number four is that you still are under the rules and regulations of being a chumra, as opposed to being a main halacha. And of course, you could always add in, and it is a good idea that when one does accept themselves, certainly if they accept, let's say a person does say, I am going to be in shul on time tomorrow, right? And they do follow that rules. One should do it as saying b'li neder. Now, it doesn't get at this challah cutting guy. He's still stuck, right? He doesn't fit into any of those rules. He recognized it was a chumra. He wants to get rid of it for the rest of his life, right? There's no specific reason that he wants to get rid of it other than we're throwing out a lot of challah, right? And my wife is annoyed. But so under those rules, so really the Hatar Sedarim would be appropriate. Some of the other ideas we get, the Sephardi guy who wants to vote for Degel HaTorah, so I'm not sure that would fit. That might be still okay. Now he realizes it's an option as opposed to before, when he might have realized it was Mikra Din, whatever it is. So, good. So we'll stop here, and we'll pick up tomorrow with something else. All right.